VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's a sort of dreary Saturday morning, but nonetheless, it is Saturday morning and it is 10 o'clock. This is, nonetheless, the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here on this very interesting day, as always, live in person. We have a lot to talk about. There is so much going on. It's unbelievable. It's also a huge anniversary. We'll get to that in a minute. But right now, as we speak, Bojo is fighting for a vote to make Brexit happen, and seemingly very much like what would be happening in Washington, D.C., he's being opposed by all the usual idiots who do not want change at any price. So I wish him well. It's been over 3 years now that the people spoke, and the Parliament of supposedly elected representatives is doing no one any favors by dragging their feet. So I wish him well. It seems like there's a pretty good chance it'll be postponed again, maybe only till the 31st, maybe longer. They got to get it done, people. You got to get it done.
Yeah, I just got a breaking news from the Wall Street Journal saying that it's likely to get to have to request an extension.
Remember, though, it's Boris Johnson.
Yep.
That means that nothing is a given. That man is a leader. Interesting. Anyway, for all of our regulars, welcome back. Thanks for always being here. We appreciate it that you're the reason we get up in the morning, do this. And for the new people, if you are catching us for the first time, either because you heard about it or you happened upon it, stick around for a while. We'll talk about all kinds of fun things. And besides, what better do you have to do today in weather like this? We're getting the eastern bands of Nestor. It's bringing some needed rain to the western part of the state, so they can give us a little too. I don't want the several inches thing, but I think it'll do everybody some good, and it doesn't appear that it's going to be that harmful, except if you live in Seminole and you happen to have a tornado spin off of it, and that did not look pretty. But, you know, Florida and tornadoes, going to happen once in a while. Anyway, we got so much to talk about today. Those of you of a certain age, meaning that which resembles mine, will probably remember Black Monday, October 19th, 1987, with a degree of fondness that you could only put in air quotes. It was the day the Dow took a big drop, and I will have a trivia question on that very subject today, which we will get to before too long. Meanwhile, I thought the market was an interesting place this week, and I always try to sum it up in a word, and the word for me probably this week would be confusing.
Mm.
That's as opposed to bad or good.
Yeah, it was mostly
kind
good.
Of confusing.
It's mostly good.
It came out all right.
I saw a little bit of a pullback on Friday, but it was largely two stocks that had some issues. It was Boeing and J&J, Johnson & Johnson. Johnson & Johnson, you would think, would be the opioids related, but it was actually related to a lawsuit about their baby powder.
And both of them have one thing in common. Both of them had to do with the people in the corporation knowing more than they were telling.
Right.
For a long time.
It's that old saying about you're not going to get busted for the crime, you'll get busted for the cover-up.
Exactly.
And not being, not giving full disclosure to regulators is a bad idea. We've seen it over and over.
And yet,
the
first intuition of people like that is to cover it up.
Yep, it's just not a good idea. Those two companies caused the Dow to end the week down about 0.2%. Well, the other two indexes actually posted nice gains. The NASDAQ was up 0.4% and the S&P up 0.5%. So October's turning into a pretty decent month with the S&P up 2% and the other two indexes up about 1.5%. And I'll take that. That's not a bad start to this quarter.
No, the month is hanging together.
The gains in the S&P were not really uniform across sectors this week. We saw energy decline 1.5%. Technology was down just under 1%, and utilities were slightly negative. But healthcare gained the most at 2.02%, followed by financials at 1.7%. Both these sectors rallied on strong earnings reports. Healthcare was United Healthcare had a really strong earnings report, and then financials by JP Morgan, which came out of the gate strong this quarter. Small and mid caps both gained more than 1% this week and outperformed their larger cap indexes, which was good to see. I'm happy to see that outperformance in small and mids finally, because it's been the opposite for so long now.
It seems a little strange to me when it's the first month in a long time the dollar's been dropping. This is kind of late to the party, but nonetheless, I'll take it.
You just stole my thunder. But,
oh, darn,
yeah.
Sorry.
But no one really talked about it this week.
No.
The dollar posted a pretty steep loss decline this week, and no one said a word about it.
Yeah, the noise here in the background was me cheering.
I thought that, you know, Trump would be all over Twitter about that one, but I guess he's been distracted by other things. Commodities were kind of a mixed bag during the week. Oil dropped almost 2%, while natural gas shot up more than 5%. If somebody can tell me what the trading pattern for natural gas is this year, please do, because you could make a killing on the volatility.
Crooked line.
Yeah, it's crazy. Gold and silver both posted modest gains, and treasuries were mainly flat for the week. An interesting move that started in October that was what we were talking about earlier with the dollar. That's good and bad news, as it always is when the dollar moves in either direction. What it means is that our goods that we manufacture here will now be cheaper to buy overseas, so it's good for our manufacturing sector, which could really use a shot in the butt right now. So I think that most people are going to cheer this move down, but at the same time, the dollar dropping isn't good for everyone. So what do you think? What are your thoughts on that?
It was overvalued.
Yeah, I agree. It had really risen pretty steeply over the last year or so.
When something's overvalued and the markets are working, it'll come down. Nothing mysterious to me.
Earnings season officially got underway this week, and analysts are pretty bearish right now. They forecast a decline of 2.2% in year-over-year earnings for the S&P 500 companies. So far this quarter, about 100 companies have reported. Still too early to make a call on just how it'll end up, but at this time, 78% of stocks have beat on earnings and 66% on revenue.
It's a rip, snort, and start.
Both of those numbers would be considered excellent if they hold, but that's a big if. So we'll see what happens. But so far, so good.
Yeah.
But that generally, when you go into an earnings season where analysts have been dropping their forecasts at the rate that they have recently, it's going to be a good for beating, because you're going in with lowered expectations. Well, earnings came in strong this week. Economic data did not. The retail sales report was a big disappointment, with the headline number coming in at negative 0.3% versus an expected rise of 0.3%. So about 0.6% difference between the actual and the forecast. However, it was offset a bit by the positive revision to the August numbers of 0.2%. And then if you strip out the volatile auto and gas sectors, retail sales were basically flat. So it really wasn't as bad as the headline number, but it wasn't a great report regardless. It's actually the first decline in retail sales in 6 months, so I also wouldn't read too much into it unless it becomes a trend. But for now, I think it was just kind of a one-off.
And you were coming off a period of time where the consumers were spending money like we were crazy.
Crazy, yeah.
So, you know, the problem with going point to point on anything to develop statistics is that you don't have any averaging, rounding, smoothing of the curve or anything like that. So you got to look at it, but you also have to take it for exactly what it's worth and not get too upset about anything unless it turns into a real pattern. Much more to come on the Market Wrap. Then we'll get into some other topics. Got to take a short break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a trivia question today about Black Monday, brought to you as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. 32 years ago today, it was a Monday. Do you remember where you were? I do. Thankfully, I guess I was playing golf rather than watching the stock market, because didn't ruin my day until I got home. But the market back then dropped, the Dow dropped 22.6%, which was a whopping 508-point loss. Today, if we had a 508-point loss, what percentage loss would that represent at today's numbers? I need it to plus or minus 0.1%. So how much would a 508-point loss represent today? We've seen a few.
Mm-hmm. We saw one recently. Worse than that. Yeah, definitely.
A little bit different. All right, back just a... You got any quick notes on the economy and the markets for the week?
No, I just the only thing I had to wrap up was that the housing numbers were a little bit mixed this mm-hmm. week. The home builder sentiment came in much stronger than expected, which is a great sign. Yep. However, housing starts missed and fell a little bit. So they're still in an uptrend, though, overall, which is a good
sign.
Again,
that was off a high number.
Yep, it was. And then initial jobless claims came in at 214,000, and I think we can officially say that jobless claims are moving sideways. I don't know if they can actually go any lower just due to number of people in the country. I mean,
how many people are working, that number gets relatively smaller every week.
Yeah, there's just nowhere else for it to go. Going down is almost impossible at this point.
Which brings me to one of the conclusions that was reached this week. Apparently, Elizabeth Warren was heard to say this week that our economy is in free fall. Now, I've been in some economies that were in free fall, and this is not one of them when you have layoffs like they are and so on. So I'm just going to remind everybody, don't listen to this stupid political stuff that goes around. If you want to know what's going on in the economy and the markets and so on, just turn on your radio Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, and we'll tell you the truth. I got a bunch of other goodies today. You're going to love them. But the people who are reporting numbers are also suspect, I think. And the one I was pointing out to Adam, when they revised the non-auto retail sales from last month from up 0.1% to up 0.4%, that is not a miss. That is misinformation. If you can't compute your statistics closer than that on the first release, release them later. This is doing no one any good when people do a lot of their planning and investing and so on these numbers. You can't come back and say I was off by 300%. That doesn't cut it with me at all.
Pretty bad.
Who are these guys? My gosh. Yeah, they're overpaid, whoever the heck they are. Anyway, enough of that, I guess, huh? There's a bunch of things going on, as I said, and a lot of them are just about stupidity. I want to spend a little bit of time discussing some of the stupidity. I think in order for anybody to be a good investor, even a good citizen, and have an idea of what's going on, you ought to be insulated a little bit from some of the worst stupidity that could ever happen. And it's all over the place. Some of them come around again. So if you'd like to read any of the financial media, which I know a lot of you do, otherwise, why else would you be tuning into this program every week? But here's a great one that came up again. This comes up about every 5 years. Revealed after 54 years, little known Kennedy accounts. Ooh, got your attention now? Kennedys were rich, right? So they must have something really special. Well, if you read carefully enough about the Kennedy accounts that are little known, what's little known is the term Kennedy accounts because they made it up. We have a name for them. They're called dividend reinvestment programs. How about that, people? You've heard of those, haven't you? DRIPs, dividend reinvestment programs. That's where you buy stocks that pay dividends. And instead of paying the dividends to you in cash, they reinvest them in fractional shares of the stock. And you do that over as long as you want to, and the wealth builds up inside there, and lo and behold, you've become very successful. Well, the Kennedys apparently use that. Who wouldn't, after all, if you were a big market investor? But if you're going to buy a $300 newsletter from some people south of here, so that they can tell you what a Kennedy account is, I can save you some money. In fact, I just did. Just open up a dividend reinvestment program. Now, let me say a word about the reason I brought this up. Dividend reinvestment programs were popular partly because they were easy. You put them on cruise control, they pay the dividend, they buy shares and wait till the next dividend's declared. But the biggest deal for them was that they were commission free. So you would pay a commission buying the stock, but that's the last time you'd pay. The dividends would be reinvested for free within the drips. Cool. Well, guess what happened? All of a sudden, people don't charge commissions.
Everything's free. Yeah.
So you can buy. In fact, Schwab, who has been leading the deal, has now declared that people are going to be able to buy fractional shares for free. In other words, you really don't need the drip programs anymore. To do exactly the same thing that you can do by yourself or with an advisor.
And that was an interesting piece of news to, this week, too, because if you think about it, if you have $500 or $1,000 to invest and you want to buy Amazon, you can't do it because you have to buy one share, which is valued at more than $1,000. So now, if you have a Schwab account, you can actually buy a fraction of a share of Amazon.
$1,000.
Just as good as owning a whole share. If the stock goes up 5%, you still make 5%.
No trading costs?
Nope.
Sell it someday? No
trading
costs?
Pretty good deal. I expect the others will probably follow suit on that.
Like Lemmings?
Yeah. I mean, you can already sell fractional shares because if you own them through a drip program, you can sell them. So why wouldn't you be able to buy them? It just makes sense, especially in these days when stock splits aren't nearly as popular as they seem to have been in the past. A lot of companies are just letting their stock prices run up.
You're going to see it more and more, which really means less and less of the stock splitting. The reason they would do it is to attract more investors, because you can't afford $1,000 share, but maybe you can afford a $200 share. Remember when Apple split from a really big number down to a couple hundred? Well, all of a sudden you bring a lot more people into the market. But I don't care anymore.
No,
you got $200. You want to buy Apple? Fine, buy $200 worth of a share of Apple.
It used to be pretty common to buy in what was called a round lot, which was 100 shares of something. And a lot of people wouldn't trade unless they could do that because they'd get better pricing.
Right.
These days, with everything happening electronically, I don't even worry about it anymore. It's just not important.
No, and all I can say is thank you, Charles Schwab, for making the lives of investors and advisors alike a lot easier by not having to consider the cost of making a transaction.
Exactly.
That is really cool. Now, we have spoken over the last couple of weeks since this has been going on about what are they going to do? Because this is costing the big brokerages and the big custodians, Schwab, TD, Fidelity, E-Trade. These people are losing a lot of revenue because whether you know it or not, when we would make a trade that had a ticket charge on it, which we had to do occasionally, not that often because we try to find things that were previously free to trade on our platform. But when we did have to, we didn't get anything of it. So it was better for us and better for the client at the same time to buy something that was free to trade. Well, now with so many of those things free to trade, guess what's happening? Schwab, TD, E-Trade, so on, Fidelity, they're losing a lot of revenue because they were keeping all of those trading fees to basically cover costs and add to their profit. They don't have it anymore. And I said, something's going to happen, and when it does happen, I'll bring it to you. Well, something happened, and this one was kind of an interesting one. You can see from this article what's happening for them, and it does not impact me, does not impact you, does not impact Adam, but it's going to have a dramatic impact on some people. So there is a former Charles Schwab executive. Her name is Terry Kalson, originally from Wisconsin, of all places. She was named the Financial Woman of San Francisco in June, named her Financial Woman of the Year. They recognized her work and her mentoring while she was Executive Vice President of Investor Services at Charles Schwab Company. 1 month after being recognized by the Financial Woman of San Francisco, she was laid off from Schwab. She was a big hitter, you know, made a lot of money. So she took it like a woman, I guess you would say, and she gave a speech to the group and said Schwab had cut 600 jobs, 3% of its workforce, because the brokerage was adapting to cost pressures, including lower interest rates and so on. Also cut at the same time was Chief Marketing Officer and Executive Vice President Andy Gill and Chris Thorne, Senior Vice President for Schwab Client, Private Client Investment Advisory. So there are going to be some things at all of these companies that are going to hurt. I think they're going to pare down some of their super expensive face-to-face type meetings. You might be a lot better off with a certified financial planner and a registered investment advisory if you're currently with one of these. But she showed a good sense of humor when she said, couldn't they have found someone more qualified for this award? Like maybe someone with a job?
Nice.
I give her a lot of credit.
No doubt.
She said she's getting to know her kids for the first time in a while, too. So I suspect she'll be taking a little time off, and then you'll hear from her again. Never know. All right, we got a lot more to talk about after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Fanway.
And the trivia question is still out there. 32 years ago today, the market dropped 22.6%. which was 508 points back in 1987. If we drop 508 points today, what percentage drop would that be, plus or minus one-tenth of a percent? All right, Adam has a few things he wants to hit. We're going to pepper you with some kind of quick things here that people should know.
Yep, last week we had a call from Rob, and he wanted to know that if he took his pension as a lump sum, his pension was tied to Social Security, so Social Security would be reduced by some corresponding amount to his pension. But he was being offered a lump sum option and wanted to know if his Social Security would still be reduced. And unfortunately, we found that and we mentioned that we thought it would be bad news, and it is bad news. It drops by the same amount whether you take it as a lump sum or a pension. There's a formula that they use, and sorry, Rob, you're out of luck.
Every few years, I come up with something where I think, aha, maybe this will be the time I beat the IRS. But bet I can think of something unique that they haven't thought of. And every time, I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, Paul.
Yeah, you said that 32 years ago today, that was like a 22.2% drop.
22.6.
Okay. Today, that would be like 3%.
It's actually less than that today.
Wow.
Just outside the margin. Sorry. That is okay. Interesting, isn't it?
After that crash, it took a few months for the recovery to happen into 1988, but once it did, the market came roaring back well into the 1990s. Am I correct about that?
You are precisely correct about that.
Several companies declared a stock split in the early 90s.
Oh, yeah, it's been going on really ever since, too. And we got the periods of time, like 01, 08, where things pull back. But we get over those hurdles, and on we go. So my favorite statistic is going back a little bit before the day we're talking about, back to January 20th, 1981. That was the day Ronald Reagan was inaugurated. And the Dow stood at that day at 954. And here we are, not that many years later, it's at 26,000 and change. It's very resilient.
By the way, I'm going to call you back on or about December 1st. That'll be the six-month
plan. Was that you?
Oh, okay.
For me to call you back, and I'll be asking you, did I do the right thing by keeping my money in Kirk Bond? So we got about 6 weeks to go, and I'll talk to you then, but maybe before then.
You're on my calendar. I'm glad we're on yours.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate
the call.
John.
Yeah, I just want to try to answer your question.
Sure.
I think it's 1.9%.
That's within the margin because it's exactly right.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Exactly right.
Oh, okay.
What a difference a few years makes, huh?
Yeah, I guess so, man.
Yeah, we always try to have a point when we do these things. The point is now, it doesn't feel good when you're watching a 500-point drop happen.
No.
But it isn't killing you anymore.
Right. 1.9%. And conversely, we saw the day after Christmas, the Dow rose over 1,000 points in a day, and it wasn't even the largest percentage gain on record. So that's what the power of big numbers does to your perception of what's happening in your portfolio.
Yeah, back in 87 with a 500-point drop, you jumped out your first-floor window. Not anymore.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thanks a lot.
I'll put you on hold, and we'll pick up your information, and thank you. I appreciate the call. That's absolutely astounding, isn't it? 1.9%.
Definitely.
How many 1% days have we had in the last year? We went a long time after the after the election, went a long time without a 1-point change. But then this situation has come back to normal, and 1 point is a ho-hum.
All right. I have a backup trivia question, too.
Okay.
So if anyone wants to try and call and guess this one, we'll get you out a little something as well. What industry is the best performing ETF year to date? What industry does it cover?
ETF best performer for industry.
Year to date.
And you talking hard goods or soft goods, or will you tell us anything else?
I'm not going to tell anything else. I just want to know what industry it relates to, and I want to hear the guesses because I know some people will have some good ideas.
Yeah, he's trying to make some money.
No, it's already happening.
Trying to keep some money.
Yeah.
All right, what industry ETF, industry-specific ETF, has outperformed the rest?
Yep.
I could take some guesses, but I don't want to.
I have some bad news as well.
I don't know that we want any of that on a dreary morning.
U.S. News and World Report just unveiled the 2020 Best Places to Retire, and Jacksonville was not in the top five.
Oh, I was afraid you'd say we're number one. Then
no.
Everybody in the world would move here.
It was not in the top five, and that's because it was number six. So really strong performance by Jacksonville. We lost to Fort Myers, Sarasota, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. That one kind of surprised me.
That's for retired Amish?
Asheville, North Carolina, and Port St. Lucie, Florida. So a very respectable group of cities to lose to.
You know what? I wouldn't live in any of those places.
Yeah, I mean, I would. There's a couple there that I would definitely consider.
Yeah, I kind of like it right here.
And then rounding out the top 10 was Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Nashville, Tennessee, Grand Rapids, and Dallas-Fort Worth. So we were right up there at number six, though. I was very impressed to see Jacksonville get some positive press like that.
Now, the people of Dallas were on display this week with the Trump rally. That's a place I could sink my teeth into, I think. They're quite a group that he had out there.
Yeah, it was a pretty impressive showing.
Yeah.
Another little tidbit here. I bet if I gave you 10 guesses, you wouldn't get this, but I just saw that there is a career field that has traditionally been dominated by men that women are flocking to. And by flocking means that the growth rate in women participating in this industry has been growing at a very rapid pace. Now, it's coming off a very small base, but they're being drawn because of the high salaries. And that industry is trucking, of all things.
Yes, I saw a thing about that this week, actually.
Yeah.
Long-haul trucking.
Yeah, long-haul trucking, because, you know, one of the reasons that this statistic of women making 70 cents on the dollar for men is thrown around, it's very skewed because women have historically gone into, at a much higher rate than men, gone into nursing, teaching, things that have not paid as well in the past. And it's great to see women going into industries that pay higher, because that will make that a one-to-one ratio.
And trucking has absolute parity.
Yeah, it does. They don't care.
Nope.
If you drive the miles, you get paid the same.
Bingo.
It is not specific based on gender whatsoever. So good to see that is happening. And I hope it's a trend that continues, and not just in trucking, and other things as well, in the STEM type careers as well.
Well, you know, because the advanced degrees, well, we start in even 4-year degrees, but advanced degrees in virtually every field. Now there are more women graduating than men.
It's across the board, and it's not just by a little bit; it's by a significant amount.
Yeah.
So,
and you could talk about any number of reasons that contribute to that. And that's a waste of time, in my opinion, to talk about why. It's much more important to talk about what. And I'll tell you, people out there, if you've got any skills in that arena of science, math, engineering, and so on, one profession you would really, 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 should really, really, really consider is financial planning.
Oh, my gosh. There's such a huge need for women in this field. And I think that was really proven this week at the Tiburon Conference. Ken Fisher, who you probably know if you watch any business channel, made some less than appropriate remarks.
Open mouth, insert foot, closed mouth.
This guy manages billions in assets, and so far, by saying some rather inappropriate and insensitive things at this conference that just had no place being said whatsoever, he's lost over $1 billion in AUM alone this week, just for opening his mouth and saying some just ridiculous things.
Including something like $600 million worth of Florida pension money.
Was that Florida? I thought there was a firefighter's pension that pulled $600 of that.
I think it was in Florida. I thought it was the state of Florida.
I'm not sure. But
anyway, you know what, folks? I read those remarks, and I would have left him.
Absolutely. He's an idiot.
If you go and visit a financial planner, and you don't get treated as an absolute equal, if the two of you walk in, or you walk in alone and you're female, and you don't get treated as an absolute equal, pick up the phone and call 904-685-1505 and come and say yes, where you'll be treated like an actual person with actual money. Our practice has an amazing number of female clients. Anyway, we'll be right back after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. Adam's auxiliary trivia questions out there. What's the best performing ETF, industry-specific ETF, for this year so far?
And you can just guess the industry. It doesn't have to be the actual ETF.
Right. And I missed it.
Yeah, it's not what I would have guessed.
No. It was pretty interesting. You want to spend 30 seconds talking about life insurance? Don't hang up. Don't turn off your radio. Nobody likes it, right? Just like those commercials on TV. Nobody talks about insurance. But what's the worst part about buying life insurance? Could it be dealing with a life insurance salesman or agent? Could be. You don't have to. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Van Wee Financial, live from the apex of the Great Pyramid.
You got it.
Can I take a shot at the auxiliary?
Of course.
Be our guest.
Let me throw spaghetti at the wall. Metal recycling.
Interesting.
You know, that is a good guess, and it is, you were thinking along the right lines,
right?
But that is not the industry that has it.
You're definitely thinking right.
Yeah.
The spaghetti slid. Oh, well.
Well, you'll understand when you hear the answer just how correct your thinking is.
Yeah, I'll be kicking my own butt here. Thank you.
Take care. Thanks for the call. Well, there's a place now called Bestow, B-E-S-T-O-W, Life Insurance. The website is hellobestow.com, and you will receive your treatment that does not involve a salesman or anything like that. Clark Howard recommends it, and you know that if it passes his muster, you're pretty safe going there.
You know what else passes his muster?
What's that?
Fee-only financial planners like ourselves.
That is absolutely correct. I taught him everything he knows. Well, okay, I didn't, but I wish I had. The table of contents for what you will need to, or what you will see if you go to hellobestow.com, product offerings, qualifications for potential customers, AM Best rating, I'll come back to that for a minute, and how to get a quote online, no medical exam policies. What's the second worst thing about buying life insurance? The medical exam. A lot of people just dread that. This doesn't have it. They will ask you some other questions, and they say their predictability from these other questions is astoundingly good. Hmm. So they've been doing some real research. Now, AM Best, the thing you want to know for sure when you're buying life insurance is, will that company be there when I need it? Or when my beneficiaries need it? And these people, there's something called a Comdex score, which is the average of all the rating people. If you want to get a Comdex score for a life insurance type company, the best place to go is to the website of our old buddy, StanTheAnnuityMan.com, and he has a direct link to the up-to-date Comdex scores by the month. It'll take you right there. So the company, in this case, what's the name of them? I can't remember. Anyway, it's an excellent company. It's got a COMDEX of 88, where above 50 is good and 100 is the very top. At 88, you're just fine. So everything I have seen about this site says if you want to try it, go right ahead. I don't think you have a thing to worry about. So if you're looking for preferably a term policy, because that's what most people actually need, just go to HelloBistro.com, answer some simple questions, and you might get a really good deal with a very, very little bit of hassle. How about that? People should think about it if they're about to become parents for the first time, if you're getting married. You know, there are any number of reasons why you want to do this. For instance, if you're buying a home and having a mortgage, do not let those people sell you mortgage insurance for your home. That's not for you. That's for your lender, and it will be overpriced. So you know, if you ever have any of these questions, you can always call the show. You can always call the office, and we'll answer them. And you can always email us at info@banwayfinancial.com, and we will be happy to answer them either on air or directly. We were talking a little bit ago about why aren't more people wanting to be financial planners when the future in this business is just so bright. The average compensation, have you read this lately for a financial planner?
No, I did not.
It's between $88,000 and $89,000 annually.
Nice.
And you're not getting dirty and you're not getting hot and sweaty in your office. But there's some things that you have to do. There's things you have to be good at. And there was one gigantic barrier that I've railed about for years and years. The first off, you got to be aware of it. Only 37% of students in a recent survey were even aware of the profession, but 63% became interested once they learned about it. So obviously, as planners ourselves, looking, because there are, by the way, over 50% of financial planners today are over 50. Very, very few are under 30. Adam's in the 40-something range. That's a pretty good chunk, like 24%.
Still early 40s.
They didn't break it down.
No, I just wanted to say that for my benefit.
I knew what you were doing.
Right.
Anyway, if you want to get in this, there's a 15% growth rate expected over the next 10 years. And remember, we're going to be replacing several percent every year, too, as people in my age bracket and up start retiring. So there's going to be a lot of need for that.
And a lot of people don't know this, but we have such a great resource right here in town at UNF's Coggins School of Business. It's actually one of the top five financial planning degree programs in the country.
Wow.
And it's located right here in Jacksonville. And I don't think, I bet almost nobody knows that, but we actually have a graduate of that program who works in our office as well.
How about that? Well, some of the barriers before were, how are you going to get started? Because one of the things that young people want, they want things like quality of life, and they want a good working environment and where they feel like they're doing some good and all that, but they also want to get paid. The lack of a steady income was almost universal when I got into this thing about 17, 18 years ago, and Adam has been telling me over the last few years that it's becoming easier and easier.
No doubt about it.
To find a job with an existing company where you can actually get your internship and your training and get paid for it.
Yeah.
That was missing to such a degree you wouldn't believe it.
Used to be they put you in a room with a telephone and told you to call your friends
exactly.
And family and sell them products they didn't need.
Yeah. Here's a dusty desk and a phone book. Get on it.
Yep.
And if there's one thing in the world that I would never do, it would be buying financial services from a young kid who's doing robocalling.
I mean, what a terrible business model.
Ugh. But that was it back in 2001 mm-hmm. when I started this. So what do you do first if you're people like us? Well, you tell kids that it exists. What's the best way to tell them about that? How about we re-implement in the middle schools and high schools, at least of America, a program on personal financial planning, how to balance a checkbook, what a stock or bond is, all those things that kids don't know that. You can't get into this business unless you know a basic amount about the basic principles. I'm not sure how we do that, but as an industry, we should be pushing for more and more education at lower and lower levels. But then again, as people get out of high school and so on, more programs like the one at UNF for financial planning. For people who have an interest in mathematics, got to be good at math. Money, amazingly, a lot of people claim they don't care about finance. I don't believe that, folks. You start to care when you get some.
Or if you don't, if you're running out of money.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got to like people. That does not seem like an extraordinary skill set to me. Like people, want to do some good with them, talk about their money, and be reasonably good with math, and then willing to work to learn the business. It seems to me, if you have a child with some aptitude looking to go to college, this might be a really good topic to discuss one of these days.
No doubt about it. I would, if my kids show an interest, I will definitely
Absolutely.
Push that.
Another interesting thing that's happening is, you know how much grief millennials get, partly from me.
And mostly deserved.
Mostly deserved. But millennials are showing a very interesting trend. They are starting to become more grown up, I guess you would say, more interested in starting families, buying houses, investing their money.
Moving out of big, high-cost cities into yep. lower-cost suburbs or lower-cost cities.
And more than 80% of them are okay with financial planners. So keep it going, millennials. Adam will be talking to you over the next few years. Okay, answer our question for us.
Yeah, so the number one performing ETF is TAN, T-A-N, and it covers the solar power industry, which is one of the reasons it's up so much is that it was down 90% from where it originally opened, and it has really bounced back this year, but it had a long way to bounce back to get back to even.
It did, and I speculate that the reason why is because now it's on its own merits. We will see you next week, same time, be here. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.